At Arizona State University, we've made online education better, smarter, and more personalized so you can go further in your aspiring field.
I decided to pursue medicine once I realized that ASU did have the online program for biological sciences. You're still required to learn the same curriculum. You're still being tested on the same content that anyone would be tested on in person. The comprehensiveness of the program prepared me so well for medical school.
Explore over 300 programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Is hot sleep keeping you awake? The Tempur-Pedic Breeze mattress pulls heat away from your body, so it feels up to 10 degrees cooler. Shop our July 4th sale to save $500 on Breeze mattresses at Tempur-Pedic.com.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot!
And he stole our crunch!
Quick, the zip line!
He's getting away!
Throw our last crunch berry!
No!
No one steals my crunch berries!
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch!
She said, get out the chat room and clean my
Glad stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favorite football podcast, back for another week and back to take a look at the best bits across the course of this season. Most of Europe's top leagues have now come to their conclusion, and even in the ones that haven't, La Liga and Serie A, most of it is done bar the shouting. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, as ever, my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Happy end of season. Obviously, we are at the business end of stuff. All the cup finals coming up, which is a great time, isn't it? It's really cool that you get to just tune into a load of cup finals over the next couple of weeks. Obviously, as this goes out, you've got the Europa coming to a climax, and you've got FA Cup, we've got Champions League, and all sorts coming in the next 2 weeks. So it's going to be good. And this just felt like a good time to review the season and try to take a bit of a ranksy take on it all. This won't be your typical awards show. It won't be the sort of stuff you read probably most other internet publications, many other serious podcasts. We'll give you some serious insight. We're also going to have a bit of fun along the way here as we hand out some awards to teams and players from across Europe as we reflect on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So in part one, we're going to do a little awards ceremony. We're going to look at a couple of different things from across Europe. We'll have your teams of the season, your players of the season, and all of those things, as well as some ranks specific awards. And then in part two, going to walk you through some of the stories you might have missed. There have been some brilliant stories across the course of this campaign that have rightfully taken the headlines, the likes of Bayer Leverkusen, the likes of Aston Villa getting to the Champions League. But I think that there's a couple that have maybe slipped a little bit below the radar. So I'm going to touch on those as well in part two. But I'm going to start things off with these awards. And so I'm going to hand you over to your host for the awards, Mr. Dean Jones. We're going to work our way through a fair few different bits here.
Yeah, so I came up with some headings for some different awards to hand out. And initially I thought, well, I know Jack's taken care of part two, so I should let him just crack on with picking out those stories and I should just do this on my own. But I don't think it's right that I do that, because I think you've got too much knowledge of European football that I might not have. Might's a bit strong. I haven't got. I haven't got that. I might have missed. So I'll make suggestions. I'll say where I think we're at. And I want you to come back at me with some alternative views, perhaps. Maybe there won't be one on some of them. Maybe there won't be. Maybe it'll be obvious. I think one or two of them will be obvious. But we'll find a winner for each category and they'll become the ranks award winners of 2024. I feel like we do this every season, but just in a slightly different way.
Yeah. Good to keep it fresh, right?
Yeah. So I haven't even looked back at past episodes to see what headlines and what awards we gave out. But we're going to start with European Player of the Year. So obviously it's been a great season across all the domestic leagues, but I think my starting point here was by looking at the players of the year from each year, the ones that have been announced so far, a couple are still to come. But the two that stood out was Phil Foden in the Premier League and Florian Wirtz in the Bundesliga. Obviously, you can throw others into the discussion here. Kylian Mbappe, obviously. Perhaps Jude Bellingham gets a mention. I'm not sure who got Italy's Player of the Year, actually.
Not announced yet, because Serie A season has a week to go.
That explains that. But either way, I don't think it's going to be somebody that topples Foden or Wirtz. Now, before I get your opinion on this, I just want to run through the stats on these two, who are both phenomenal, right? And both so exciting, in some ways similar, to be honest. Phil Foden, 23 years old. This season, and he's not finished yet, don't forget, 52 appearances, 27 goals, 11 assists. Obviously also wrapped up the Premier League title for Man City at the weekend with his two goals that put him in command of that final match of the season. Florian Wirtz is 2 years younger. He's 21 years old. So far, he's played 47 games. He scored 18 goals and got 20 assists. So fewer goals, but more assists. And he's also playing in a team that are obviously, well, they're unbeatable. Simple as that. And he's also on for more silverware, more trophies, possibly more goals and assists. Difficult to separate them. Before we do try to, have I missed anybody?
No, I don't think so. I think Lautaro Martinez probably will be the player of the season in Serie A, given them Inter's dominance and the way that they were able to put that together. I can't see anyone else toppling him. It's not been, you know, the most explosive season, I think, from Lautaro, but he's been much more consistent and he has led this Inter side beautifully from the front. And his kind of impact and influence on this team is so, so important. So I'd be surprised if he isn't the Serie A player of the season or the official one at the very least. But I think there's probably a case that you could make for two of the Real Madrid boys, for Vinicius Jr. and Jude Bellingham, to be firmly within this conversation. And especially if Real Madrid go on and win the Champions League,
yeah,
then I think that, you know, whoever has the impact in that final, whether that be Vinny, whether that be Jude Bellingham, look, maybe it's someone else. Maybe Toni Kroos comes out with his final game for Real Madrid and absolutely dominates the Champions League final. I think that there will be kind of a clamour for Bellingham at this point. And I think considering the season he's had, that's reasonable. But I would have given it to Florian Wirtz. Yeah, as you say, 18 goals, 20 assists across all competitions this season. But just, you know, that is a slightly lower games total than perhaps you might have expected. Maybe a slightly lower minutes total. It's just over 3,000 minutes he's played for Leverkusen, which isn't bad by any stretch of the imagination. But it's not the kind of, oh, he's played every minute of every game across all competitions. And I think we've seen, you know, later in this campaign, and the fact that he didn't start the last six games in the Bundesliga for Leverkusen. The fact that, you know, across the course of those games, he missed two completely. Xabi Alonso wrapping him a little bit in cotton wool. We saw him not used until the last couple of minutes against Roma at the end of the Europa League second leg. It was interesting to see how he's just been protected a little bit. He's obviously carrying a slight knock, But I think also, though, all of that kind of comes into the fact that Alonso wants him available and at full fitness for these last two cup finals that they have. Now, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on the day of release, then it is the day of the Europa League final. We'll see how he gets on in that one. And then a couple of days later, he'll be playing in the DFB Pokal final against Kaiserslautern. So when you kind of put all of that together and you see how important he is, the fact that he is being rested in these kind of games to see Leverkusen over the line. Now, we know that they got there. They finished the season unbeaten. They got those moments late on. And they are invincible in the Bundesliga, first team ever to do that. But I think his importance is kind of highlighted by the fact that, you know, Alonso, I think, probably sees the treble as the most important thing that they could achieve this season. Yes, the invincible season is an incredible one historically, and they got there without this at the end. But also, I think that the fact that he is just sort of dialing in to being like, he must be ready, and I want him at the Euros because he has that ability to go and shine and maybe be a difference maker for Germany at a home Euros, all kind of feeds in. But you look at the games where, and I know the stats aren't everything, but there are about five or six games across the course of a season where Wirtz didn't pick up a goal or an assist. He's been that influential. And this isn't, you know, sometimes you see players rack up, and we saw it with someone like Alexander Sorloth at the weekend, who looks like he's going to win the Pichichi in Spain, scoring four goals in that game. We see him score, you know, he scored a lot of goals in a game against Marseille in the Europa League as well. Sometimes these stats get boosted by a couple of really big games. That's not really the case for Wirtz. Yes, he scored a hat-trick against Werder Bremen off the bench, but when you kind of like bring it through the season, it's been the consistency where he will provide a goal or an assist in almost every single game. And I think that consistency elevates him to the top of this table, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And you're right. So Foden has played more minutes, about 900 more minutes, to be fair, which obviously equals out about 10 more games across the season so far. But what's important to take into account is part of that is because he's been so successful. So he's played at the Club World Cup. He's played in the UEFA Super Cup, played in the Community Shield. So he's played in matches like that.
That weren't available to Wirtz. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, on top of the fact that while Wirtz was playing in the Europa League, Foden was playing in the Champions League, which is obviously a level up from that.
Yeah.
So there's that comparison to make as well. But Foden has played, in terms of minutes, about 10 games more across the season than Wirtz. Look, Foden's been phenomenal. Why would Wirtz get this ahead of Phil Foden? What is the outstanding trait for you that would mean that he gets the nod?
I think that, you know, we talked about where clubs are, and actually I think this is a nice comparison, these two, because they've both been quite lightning roddy for their respective sides this year. And I've been incredibly impressed with how Foden has stepped up, especially in that first period of the season, in the absence of De Bruyne, to become the kind of creative fulcrum and the creative hub of this Man City side, and not relinquish his spot even when De Bruyne came back, be able to move around and still be able to have the impact that he's having on games, despite playing in numerous different positions. I think that for Leverkusen, and on the verge of, you know, if they do win these two finals, I don't think it's possible to say, and maybe we're giving away other awards here, I don't think it's possible to say that any single club in Europe has had a better season than Bayer Leverkusen. If they complete an invincible treble, whether you think that, you know, a treble that includes the Europa League as opposed to the Champions League is a slightly different level is one thing, and that's fine. But to do it while going invincible, if they were to pull this off, I think it would be one of the most remarkable achievements in club football ever, full stop. We're talking about something that has really never been done before. And so when you look at that and you look at how important Wirtz has been, the, you know, the creative spark that lights up this Leverkusen side, there are brilliant players around him. But when the going gets tough, this Leverkusen side look to Florian Wirtz. They look to a youngster who has come through and made himself a superstar. A 21-year-old shoulders the creative burden for this side. And you look at the tough moments, and yes, you talk about those Patrick Schick winners and late goals to get them through and keep the record going. All of that, yes. But who is the player that the ball goes to when Leverkusen are looking for something? And the answer is Wirtz, every time. I think that in terms of the way that he has elevated his side, the players around Wirtz are maybe not quite on the same level that the players around Foden are. And if Foden doesn't step up, especially in the second half of this season, you know, De Bruyne steps up. Haaland steps up. There are lots of players who make a difference to this City side. I think Foden has been the best of them. But I think in terms of where Wirtz is, the fact that they look to him, the fact he is the main man for what could be an unprecedented season for Leverkusen, probably just tips the balance in his favour as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, look, just to one more defence of Phil Foden in this award. I mean, when you come into the closing games of the season, when you get to that second stage of the season from January onwards, you look at Foden's form, he bags a couple of hat-tricks, he scores four braces. You know, this guy has really stepped up this season. Pep Guardiola's played him in a different role and brave enough to do that. I have to wait to see whether Gareth Southgate takes note of that and copies him. But he's really given him the opportunity to thrive in that position. And Foden's taken it with both feet. Well, usually just one of his feet. But it's been remarkable. The manner of his scoring, even on Sunday in that final game of the season, the way he takes the ball on the half turn and smashes that into the corner is phenomenal. The problem is, I didn't even vote for Phil Foden as the English Player of the Year.
And actually, you're going to come to this.
I do now accept that that was wrong. I voted for Declan Rice. And this, you've got to give me, like, this was 6 weeks ago I probably had to vote on it. I probably voted too early. I should have left it till deadline day, in which case Foden might have got the nod. But at that stage, I still thought Arsenal had a good chance to win the league. I was pressed by Declan Rice and all these different reasons we won't go into right now because they don't matter. But Foden's come up clutch, and that in itself means that he is the English Footballer of the Year, and he does deserve that. It's a tough call. I think I'm going to let you have it.
I think just talking of those clutch moments, and look, you know, I've just referenced the fact that the Wirtz has missed the last couple of games, right? But Leverkusen won the league on the weekend of the 14th, 15th of April, right? You look at the five games before that. Okay, so they're closing in after that win against Bayern Munich, and then obviously we saw Bayern Munich lose to Heidenheim and all of these different things. But there's five games before that. So 10th of March, they play Wolfsburg at home. Good Wolfsburg side who have been, you know, hit there and around and cause a few headaches this year. Who scores the opener? Florian Wirtz. On the 26th, the week after, Magic 26th, 17th of March, they play Freiburg, who just missed out on the European places. Who scores the opener? Florian Wirtz. You play Union Berlin on the 6th of April. They win 1-0. Who scores? Florian Wirtz. And then they play Werder Bremen with the title on the line. And Wirtz starts on the bench because he's a little bit injured. They're 2-0 up at halftime. He comes on, he scores a hat-trick. It's like the moment that they needed someone to rise to the occasion, Wirtz dropped the most impressive period of his season. And he did it in such beautiful style. I think that's the difference for me. And look, Foden, again, at the weekend, we're splitting hairs here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about two unbelievable players who have been absolutely crucial to their sides winning the leagues in different ways. And you could give it to either of them and it would be absolutely fine. But my vote would go to Wirtz.
The European Player of the Year is Florian Wirtz.
Fantastic.
Congratulations.
Fantastic.
Congratulations to him and congratulations to Jack for a persuasive argument. One which I was ready and open to be broken on.
Yeah, I know. You'd already played, you've kind of tossed it up and I've hit the serve. We're good.
Yeah, you stuck it in the top bins for Florian Wirtz. Well played. All right, the next one is pretty complicated. The rising European star of 23-24. Now, this is tricky because you can get all sorts of different rising stars and you can do different ages and different profiles.
It's Florian Wirtz. I'm joking.
It's not Florian Wirtz. Florian Wirtz is young but too well established and too good. So it's a guy who's kind of made their name this season, but is also like, I'd prefer this person to be like brand new on the scene, personally. Yeah. So like Cole Palmer is obviously like the young English Player of the Year, the breakout star of the year, fine, but he's 22 years old. We did know of him before because he was at Man City. He just couldn't get in the team because they're too good. And he's been phenomenal, fine. But I don't think he gets this.
Yeah, okay. Is that fair? I mean, I would have probably considered him, but I think that if you're going to go, you know, we're going to back to kind of almost rookie of the year kind of vibes.
I think it is more like a rookie of the year, because what I've got in my head are players like Kobbie Mainoo, Lamine Yamal, Arda Güler, Lenny Yoro, Zaire Emery.
Yeah, okay. Rules out my shout, which was going to be João Neves at Benfica. But
is he 20?
No, he's young. He's young enough to
19,
be in
right?
He's young enough to be in the conversation, but I think he
probably, but he's too well established at 19.
He had his breakout year probably last season, I think. And this year, I think he's established himself as, you know, an absolute superstar and one rising through the ranks at a real pace. But he's already too well established as a kind of heart of this Benfica side immediately.
Yeah, but he is a rising star in the sense that Benfica makes stars, and they start at Benfica, and then they're sold for huge money to go and become something, or they start at Sporting Lisbon and then they go on and become a superstar.
He made 17 appearances in the Primeira last year. I think that's probably too many.
So it was probably too well established. I don't know that he would have won it anyway.
I could have put together an argument.
He's phenomenal. But look, another name that I had on the list, actually, just to discuss very briefly, was Calafiore. Even though he's 22 years old, it's still a rising star. I don't think I'd heard of him before this season.
Yeah.
And suddenly,
Who's really turned his career around, considering Roma let him go and he went off to Basel and then came back into this Bologna side and been absolutely spectacular. Definitely. I think that's a very fair shout.
Yeah. So obviously Xerxes broken through, I want to say broken through. We already knew about Xerxes, but he's had a similar revival, if you like. And he's going to go on to another level because of the success of that Bologna team together this season. So I do want him in the conversation. This is going to be a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, Kobbie Mainoo has been great, but I don't think he wins the award. Definitely a breakout star, but I don't think he's the rising star of the season. I think he's been probably overplayed a little bit. As good a player as he is, I don't think that he gets this award.
I think he's excellent. I really do. I think obviously there is an element of this which is trying to push your team on towards success. It's probably something that maybe would count against João Neves if he was included as well, in that Benfica have had a pretty poor season by their standards. I think that considering that Manchester United have had a pretty poor season by their standards, that doesn't take away from how good Kobbie Mainoo has been, and the fact that he's actually been this impressive in a poor Manchester United side is impressive within itself. But I think you know, we're talking about players who have pushed their team onwards to push their team almost hard. I think that criteria probably rules out Arda Güler, if I'm honest, because, and also I'm not sure that he's had enough of a season. He's had a brilliant last 6-7 weeks, and his impact on this Real Madrid team has been incredible. But across the course of a season, I think I would struggle to make the argument that he's had the impact that some of these other players have had.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. We're down to, well, Šeško, does Šeško count, or do you think he already had his breakout, right? We already knew about him the season
before. When you've had a big move, like Güler had a big move, right, across from Fener to joining Real Madrid. Šeško had that move. Obviously, it's the pathway move from Salzburg to Leipzig, but it's still a big move. I think at that point, someone like a Lois Appender, for example, again, another one who has had a brilliant year and is definitely on the rise, but, you know, they paid a lot of money to bring him in. So it almost feels like rising stars can't have moved for big money. This is now a very narrow criteria, because you almost have to be a homegrown talent in order to be part of it. Kobbie Mainoo is probably the only person we've discussed here who actually fits the category so far.
Yeah, he is, but we've got more to come, so don't worry about that. We've got a couple that are stronger contenders in this category, I believe, than Kobbie Mainoo actually is. And we're going to start to address them right now. One of them is going to be from PSG, Warren Zaire Emery. Now, obviously, the problem with Zaire Emery, again, like you've mentioned, is that he had played a lot last season. This season, he's definitely stepped up. He's only 18 years old, though. So Zaire Emery has obviously played a lot of football this season. He's played 11 Champions League matches, 26 games in Liga. He's become a well-known player in the world of football. And so I think actually he does fit the bill better for what we're looking for here. And I mean, obviously you're a huge fan of his and you've, yeah. You've sung his praises since that pretty much the day he made his debut. But I think that Zaire Emery does fit the bill better.
It feels like it has to be homegrown.
Yeah. And the other guy that I think has been sensational is Yoro at Lille this season, 18 years old. He's played 44 games across the campaign, played almost 4,000 minutes this season. He's being tipped to make a move to Real Madrid or Man United. Last season, yeah, he had played for 13 outings, in fact, in Ligue 1. But I think he's a contender.
I feel like a lot of those were also kind of late in season, you know, off the bench at times. Yeah. This year, he's in the French team of the year. He's been phenomenal. I'm a big fan of Leniora's.
But then, of course, you've got Lamine Yamal.
I think you're missing one.
Go on.
I think you're missing Pau Cabarsi.
Okay,
who
yeah.
has very much broken out kind of
okay,
out of
this
nowhere
is a fair point.
This
yeah,
season.
That's fair.
And I think his impact on this Barcelona side has been equal, if not bigger, than Lamine Yamal's. He might not okay. have the sexier profile, and the yeah. way that Yamal plays football is incredible, and his guile and ability to beat a man and the way that Barcelona looked to him as such a youngster is incredible. But I think in terms of actual consistent performance, in terms of how a gap was plugged and filled, and he's looked so comfortable, Pau Cabarsi has had at least as big an impact as Lamine Yamal this season.
Okay, yeah, that is a completely fair point. I'm just going to start to compare these two and what we're getting out of them from this season, because this was actually Lamine Yamal's breakout season, which is, I think, the most impressive thing about him right now. He's 16 years old, right?
It's actually silly, isn't it?
It's 16 years old. This season for Barcelona, as a winger, a wide attacker, whatever you want to call it, 49 games he's played, 49 matches he's appeared in for Barcelona, 7 goals, 10 assists, 3,000 minutes he's managed to collate across the season. That is extremely impressive. Look, Cabarsi isn't far behind him in terms of minutes for this season. Obviously, he plays a centre-back, so like you say, it's not as sexy. But we're talking about a rising star here. And I think that the final thing we have to consider is who's going to be the biggest star, who's closest or more likely to have propelled themselves towards actual stardom. And that's probably where I would give Lamine Yamal the nod, but it's probably because he's an exciting player rather than a centre-back. And I'm not sure that's necessarily fair, but that's where I stand on it. So how are we going to split the two, mate?
No, I mean, it's your reward to give out. The other person I'd probably just throw in here is Max Beyer at Hoffenheim, whose goals have propelled Hoffenheim into Europe this year. And I think he's got 16 in 33 games in the Bundesliga for a 21-year-old who has been spent the last 2 years out on loan in the second tier at Hanover. So him coming in and being this impactful probably should put him into the conversation. I don't necessarily think he should win it, but I think he's a name that should be thrown around. I think it's probably between, you know, the two Barca boys and Lenny Oro, as you mentioned, who has been phenomenal. And actually, it was one that I didn't really consider, but having mentioned it now and having put it into the ether, Yoro feels like a really, really good shout for this. But equally, I will bow to your decision making on this one.
Yeah, and look, Yoro is going to become a star because he's about to land a big transfer. So there is that argument to make for him. The probably the thing that goes against him, which is not fair at all, is that I've seen the least of him because of where he's been playing. And that's just a profiling of the league. But you'll, I guess, have to take that into account too when you consider the other two have been playing in La Liga up as opposed to Liga. It's a stronger league. Lamine Yamal, I can't have passed him, mate. He played 10 Champions League games and started 7 of them.
Yeah.
Kubasi, yeah, he stepped in. He did manage to start three Champions League matches. They won two of them, and he came through in a pivotal part of their season when they're in the, you know, really up against it. But at 16 years old, to have played 10 Champions League matches in your first season in men's football is absolutely outrageous. Yeah. Absolutely outrageous. And I can't look past him. I think it's got to be Lamine.
There you go. European Rising Star of the Year on Ranks FC 2024, Lamine Yamal.
There we go.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunchventure with Cap'n Crunch.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list: teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Okay, so now we move on to the most improved player. I think there's one standout here.
I do too.
Is it Girassi?
No. No.
Oh!
No, it's not. I think the solid answer to this question is Isco.
Isco was once one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, yeah, but last year Isco went severe, couldn't get in the team, got injured, and everyone was like, that guy's going to retire. And he's come back and won something like 16 Player of the Game awards in La Liga for Betis this season. The team don't function without him. In terms of improvement from where a player was last year to where they are this year, there is no bigger gap in European football than Isco.
That's fine, but I think if you were to give Isco the most improved player of the world, he'd smash you around the head with it and tell you where to go.
No, he wouldn't. He'd be delighted. This is the
he wouldn't. Nobody wants the most improved player.
Resurgence of the year, Isco.
Resurgence, maybe. But I think that's different to most improved. Most improved for me is a player that wasn't that good in the first place, but has started to, well, go above the ceiling of where he was ever should have been. And for me, that's Girassi. This season, 30 games, 30 goals for Stuttgart,
yeah,
and 4 assists for good measure.
Okay, but last year at Stuttgart on loan, he scored 11 goals in 22 Bundesliga games. This is not a man who, and that was in a team that was fighting off relegation, right?
Mate, he's gone from scoring every other game to scoring every game.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
That's a big jump. Last season, his overall stats were 14 goals in 29 games. That's good, but it's not as good as what he's on now. The season before that, 12 goals in 48 games.
Yeah.
There was no sign this goal I was going to be like one of the goal scoring sensations of the year. And now all these teams are thinking like, do we need to just go and spend £15 million on this guy just in case this isn't a fluke? He's the best value buy you can go and get this season, this summer. I don't think there's any doubt that the most improved player of the year is Girassi. And if it was resurgence of the year, I'd let you have your score. 100%.
We're adding a new award in.
We could do it. Okay. Most improved player of the year. So Gyasi of Stuttgart.
Resurgence of second. The year. Yeah. Resurgence of the year. Isco Real Betis.
There we go. We've added an award. We'll have to stick his medal in the post because he's not here at the awards ceremony because he wasn't invited.
Okay. All righty. Well, that was an easy one. That was good.
That was an easy one, yeah. They're not all going to drag on as much as the first couple. No. Goal of the season.
What are you going for?
Well, I thought it was going to be straightforward for me. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm a bit Premier League biased here because I watched literally every single Premier League game throughout the season in comparison to watching a lot of European football, but nowhere near as much. And the Garnacho overhead against Everton is
spectacular.
Obviously spectacular. I didn't think I would even have much of an argument in my head here as to what the goal of the season would be. I thought Garnacho overhead against Everton, fine. But then on the last day of the season, Mo Kudus might have scored a better overhead, number one. Like, the goal he scored for West Ham was spectacular. It was very, very good. It was a different type, sure. But the way he tees it up and then hits it is special. And then Caicedo scores from the halfway line with one of the best halfway line efforts I've ever seen. So that confused me a little bit. I'm going to stick with Garnacho as my main contender, though. I think Garnacho's... It's just an iconic moment in Premier League history. It'll be played forever.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it stand out. So I'm going to go with Alejandro Garnacho.
I think there is a shout that Alexis McAllister's goal against Fulham should be in the conversation. I think it's one of the best goals I've ever seen. Just the way that he strikes it. Shouts out to Raul Jimenez for the assist as well. But the way that Alexis strikes that ball is incredible. The reason you can't give it to Caicedo is because there was a better goal scored from behind the halfway line, which was Lamine Kamara. Against Monaco, absolutely outrageous strike. If you haven't seen that, it's like the ball is running in front of him and it's sort of driven rather than looped. And it just like it flies. The keeper's not even that far out. The keeper's maybe on the edge of his 6-yard box and it goes over his head. It's one of the cleanest strikes you'll see. I have one contender, but I don't think it's going to win and I don't think it's going to take it off you. And mostly because I don't think you would have seen it. Which is Osasuna's Jesus Areso, who scored an incredible goal against Itafe. He basically nutmegs the defender on like basically by the corner flag and then almost scores an Olympic goal, but not from a corner. The ball's over there and he sort of slices the outside of it. The only question about it is it intentional?
Yeah.
And there is a question mark.
Oh, I have seen this goal. Yeah, I know the one you mean. It's
an incredible strike. And the angle he strikes it at is almost impossible. But I do think that it's potentially less intentional than Garnacho's, and I'm quite happy to rest my case on this one in some ways. I do like it. It was my goal of the season, but I appreciate that the Garnacho's, that the intent, the leap, all of it, and the moment as well all count towards it.
A little asterisk by this in the sense that I have not seen every goal from Europe this season. If you've got a problem with this award, then please feel free to DM me on Instagram with a video of the goal that you feel should have won this award. But the European goal of the season goes to Alejandro Garnacho for his overhead kick for Manchester United against Everton.
Yes, absolutely.
This is going to be a quick one. Team of the year. Should be outstanding achievement of the year, perhaps, depending on how this season completely ends. There seems like there is no contender. It's Bayer Leverkusen, isn't it? And they've just finished an entire Bundesliga season undefeated. They now have two cups to go and tie up to make themselves invincible across an entire year. That would put them... they'd be Hall of Famers. I mean, there's nothing like this. Absolutely,
it's all time Hall of Fame stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think that there are some great stories and some great turnarounds, and I think my honourable mentions will include Brest and Lyon as well. But I will talk about them in the kind of second part of this, where the stories you might have missed. I don't think anything holds a candle to this Leverkusen side, especially if they go on and complete the season as we expect them to.
It's time for Melon Team of the Season. The Melon Team of the Season for 23-24 is surely Man United.
A contender.
Okay, well, let me just run through this description of my Melon Team of the Season first. They came 8th in the Premier League, their lowest ever finish. They finished bottom of their Champions League group. They lost to Newcastle in the Carabao Cup. They're going into the FA Cup final this weekend, sure, but that is to literally save their season and to save face. Their players have consistently been in the front pages rather than the back pages. They've had issues with Greenwood and Anthony and Rashford. They've had a saga with Jadon Sancho. He's left the club and he's now in the Champions League final with a different club. They've had the Ineos takeover that dragged out for ages. They've still got no idea if Ten Hag's going to continue to be their manager beyond next week. And they've got floods in the stands because they've got holes in the roof. This has been proper melonish stuff. One of the great teams of European football, one of the best supported teams throughout the world, had a season of melonish behaviour on and off the pitch. And I just can't look past it. But apparently you've got a contender.
Yeah, because my melon team of the season 2023-24 is SSC Napoli, who went from the champions of Italy last season in one of the most remarkable campaigns we've ever seen to a laughing stock. They have put together the single worst defence of a Scudetto title that Serie A has ever seen. De Laurentiis appointed Rudy Garcia as Spalletti's successor. He lasted approximately 3 months. They then brought in Walter Mazzarri, who was once the Napoli manager a long time ago, and it didn't really work out all that well. He lasted approximately 3 months. And then they brought in former assistant Francesco Calzona, who stopped the bleeding a little bit, but not much, to be perfectly honest with you. They are currently 10th in Serie A and are going to miss out on European football altogether next season. In the Coppa Italia, which they, you know, had designs on winning, they lost in the round of 16, their first game in competition, 4-0 at home to Frosinone, who are battling relegation. In that game, one of the players who scored was on loan from Napoli. So that was interesting. So that was a fun one when Chidera scored to kind of wrap the game up late on in that one. They were knocked out of the Supercoppa in the final by Inter, which is, you know, less embarrassing in some ways. But in that game, Simeone, the son of Diego, he was sent off for two yellow cards in approximately 3 minutes, which completely wrecked the game. And then they conceded an 91st minute equaliser. They scraped out of their Champions League group with a win over Braga on the final day, which was more of a sigh of relief than anything else, and then lost quite comfortably to Barcelona in the round of 16. I think this is amongst the worst seasons of all time. So I'm going to put that in there, that Napoli's defence from where they were last year to where they are this year is amongst the most melonish things I've ever seen. And I'm afraid it all lies at the door of Aurelio De Laurentiis.
I might let you have that. I think you put up a good argument.
In terms of where they were to where they are now, and I know United have had the same from coming second in the Premier League to falling out of Europe altogether unless they win the FA Cup. But I just don't think, in terms of like mismanagement of a club, they didn't lose loads of important players. Yes, they lost Kim. But in terms of, you know, a lot of this squad, they mostly kept it together, right?
They kept Kvara, they kept Osimhen and all this, and the managerial change was just outrageous, wasn't it?
But then to make that mistake and then to go to Walter Mazzarri, there was an opportunity there to bring in a young, exciting coach who might be able to restore Napoli to at least being quite fun. And instead, they brought in Mazzarri, who is famously grumpy in interviews, who couldn't change anything and was out the door again in 3 months. It was comical. If you weren't a Napoli fan, watching this must have been hysterical. In Italy, watching them crumble on us. And on top of that, you'd expect now that they're going to lose at least Osimhen in this summer. But so many of these stars who have been there and been part of it, I can't see them keeping together anything resembling the team that won the league last season. And that's all because of mismanagement of the club.
It's time for Melon Team of the Season. This year's Melon Team of the Season is, in fact, Napoli.
Yeah, there you go. You're welcome, Manchester United fans. You're welcome. We're dug out of a hole there.
I've been saved in the last minute many times this season, mate. That's not the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. Okay, well, for part one, I think we're going to leave it there. After the break, I've got some great stories that you might have missed across the course of this campaign. Don't go anywhere.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunchventure with Cap'n Crunch.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where we have handed out some glorious awards, and those players are all still around us right now, just hovering around, listening to the rest of the show, chilling in the green room, having a chat with one another, having a great time. But we've still got the show to go, Jack, and you're going to hand out some, not awards, but some special mentions, or what are you going to call it, as you tell us some storylines that most of us might have missed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been some incredible stories this season, right? And we mentioned Bayer Leverkusen there, obviously, in the award ceremony and what they're doing historical. I think Bologna under Thiago Motta, finishing in the Champions League places and being back up there with this squad is an absolutely incredible story. Aston Villa getting back into the Champions League for the first time in, you know, 50 odd years. Absolutely incredible. But there are also some that have gone a little bit more under the radar, whether from, you know, slightly less hailed leagues or because they maybe aren't quite at the top of the table, but what they've done is still absolutely incredible. One that have, and maybe the most unlikely Champions League qualifiers of all, is Stade Brestois-Vanteneuf from France, better known as Brest. And what they've done this season, what they've put together, the Pirates, as they're known, is incredible. They are setting sail for the Champions League, the Pirates, and I'm incredibly, incredibly excited about it. They secured an automatic spot in the Champions League on the final day with a thumping 3-0 win over Toulouse, and also Nice did them a favour by scoring an equaliser against Lille. But this is not only their first time in the Champions League, it's their first time ever qualifying for any European competition. Brest were an amateur club in the year 2000. 24 years ago, this team was an amateur side. They've never even finished in the top half of Ligue 1 until this season. Now, Eric Roy took charge of Brest in January of last year, and they were battling relegation. He survived that battle against relegation and has completely turned them around. They're a really interesting watch. There's a lot of veterans and cast-offs in this squad. The front pairing is Martin Satriano, who was once at Inter, and Steve Meunier, who was linked with Fulham for about 200 years. I think that attests to it. But what I really like about Brest, their ability to go direct, to utilize their aerial ability, and, you know, they can play out the back, but they're quite happy to be intense, to be direct. And I really, really enjoy watching them play. I think their star man for me is Román del Castillo. His crossing ability is a huge, huge weapon. But there's also Pierre-Lys Malou, who you might remember playing briefly at Norwich, who's become a controlling force in midfield and I think was probably a shout to be in the European team of the season. I mentioned it very briefly. Kenny Lala, you might remember, and Bradley Locco, who's perhaps the breakout star of this Brest side and is someone that I'd imagine that they're going to be fighting off suitors for. They're a really nicely balanced fullback pairing. Lala drops deeper, allows Locco to push on. On the right, Lala kind of sits in and Del Castillo plays high and wide. whilst the left winger, often Ladouaron, tucks inside to allow Loco space to gallop into. But the turnaround from where Brest were, and I think that line about them not ever qualifying for any European competition, this is not a side that have been in the Europa League, the UEFA Cup, you know, the Conference League. They've never, ever been in a European competition. And now they are going straight into the new phase of the Champions League group stages. It's absolutely unbelievable what Brest have put together this year. And I just wanted to shout them out and give them some love, because I think that in all of the stories about other sides doing well, Ligue 1 sometimes gets a little bit brushed under the carpet, and what they've achieved is incredible.
Absolutely, mate. I mean, this is exactly why you are leading this section. You're teaching us as you go. So I'm happy to take on board all those words of wisdom, if you like, from you on how good Brest have actually been.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to go into, you know, these things too deep. I want to just sort of shout them out and move on with them. There's one more from Ligue 1, which is Lyon. Right, we mentioned Lyon on our Monday post box, but this felt like too good a story to not get into the main podcast as well. So on the 14th of December, Lyon were bottom of Ligue 1. They had 10 points from 15 games and they were staring into the abyss. They'd had two managers already at this point. Laurent Blanc was sacked after just three games and they replaced him with Fabio Grosso, who lasted less than 10 weeks. They turned to youth coach Pierre Sage, which translates as wise stone, which is fun. He took the reins at the start of December. He is another one of that Will Still mold where he hasn't got his coaching badges, all of his coaching badges. Okay. He picked up his first win on December the 10th and went on a run of four wins in a row that dragged them out of the relegation zone. And, you know, he was appointed permanently in January. Since then, Lyon have won 15 out of their 19 games and they've reached Europa League qualifying spots. They still have a cup final against PSG to play. And this season, which in December looked like the world's biggest write-off, could still end in silverware. And what I like about Sage is that he wants to play modern, aggressive football. And he gets his squad on board with some really funny bits and bobs that he's doing. And he basically spoke after they lost to Rennes and they 3-0 down and they turned it around the second half. They lost 3-2, but they had a much better second half. And they were like, what did you tell them at halftime? His quote was this. He said, I told them to stop playing cello and start playing electric guitar. We needed to increase the necessary level of intensity in the game, everything we didn't see in the first half and which appeared occasionally in the second half. With the players we have, we cannot afford this kind of performance. We will quickly put the cello back in its bag. Well, it's worked. It's been not quite heavy metal football, but very much he's turned the amp upwards. And look, his record is exemplary. He's picked up 2.09 points per game as Lyon boss. He's got a harmonious tune out of a squad that chewed up and spat out two far more experienced bosses. Alexander Lacazette looks reborn. Nemanja Matic looks reborn. Maxence Kakere looks back to his best. Ernest Nuamar, who they signed in the summer, looks like a world beater. And Ryan Cherki, who looked like he was leaving the club last summer, is flying once again under his former youth coach. The balance, the vibe of the team is completely and utterly turned around. And I think when you look at it, Sage is going to have to accelerate those coaching badges because owner John Textor has already said that he's going to be continuing as a coach next season. In all honesty, it would have been a travesty if he didn't.
Very good, mate. I'm loving this. I love it when you do some like proper deep dive research stuff and just rattle it out. This is a new skill that you've absolutely nailed. And it's reflected in the fact that last week, Jack on Patreon managed to get a winning bet. It's obviously not on the levels of my Gvardiol one, but Jack did a double bet. Both bets were from Ligue 1, weren't they?
Yeah, PSG to beat Metz by more than two or more, and Lorient to beat Clermont by two or more. In a real shame.
It came in.
It really did. It was brilliant. But a real shame that Lorient didn't stay up. They won 5-0 on the final day, but they were relegated on like goals against in a head-to-head instead of staying up. So it was a bit sad for Lorient, but I knew they'd come out fighting, and they did.
Well, you're a Ligue 1 guru, mate.
I'm about to leave Ligue 1, though. I am going to go to the Bundesliga. Au revoir to the Bundesliga, where I think that obviously Leverkusen have taken most of the headlines. Stuttgart, who finished second, have taken the rest of the headlines in terms of where they finish. There's been a little bit of love for Hoffenheim, not in Germany, because Hoffenheim are fundamentally hated in the same way that RB Leipzig are. But there's been a bit of a really impressive stuff for Pellegrino Matarazzo, who's really guided that team better, and for Max Beyer, who I mentioned earlier, who's now going to be in the Germany squad for the Euros. Quietly behind them, I don't think enough people are talking about Heidenheim. Because if Leverkusen win the DFB Pokal at the weekend against Kaiserslautern, newly promoted Heidenheim will get a spot in the Europa Conference League. And Heidenheim's journey is pretty remarkable. So their manager, the talismanic Frank Schmidt, has been in charge of the club since 2009. He is the only person that's ever coached Heidenheim. Because Heidenheim basically it was separated from Heidenheimer and took on a new name and went down to the fifth tier, right? Schmidt came in to replace him. He just finished playing. He played his last 4 years at Heidenheim, and he took over as the coach. He has taken them from the fifth tier of German football to the verge of the Europa Conference League. We expect Leverkusen to win that game. Weirder things have happened. Mm. But if they win that game, Heidenheim will be in Europe. This man is a revelation. And he's only 50. He took over so young. I think he was 36 when he took over, or 34 when he took over. He became the longest serving manager at any club in German history at the start of this season. He is the longest serving coach across the top five leagues of Europe right now. And to take this club all the way is incredible. There's their debut Bundesliga campaign, and most people thought that their chances of survival looked pretty slim. You know, they'd never been in the Bundesliga before. They were operating on a pretty small budget, and Heidenheim is a town of about 50,000 people with a stadium that seats 15,000. It's the smallest in the division by a distance. They're an incredible set-piece team, perhaps the best in the Bundesliga. Their home record in particular has been really, really impressive. They've had some massive wins, including coming from 2-0 down to beat Bayern Munich. But there's also a really fun, weird story associated with Heidenheim. And I want to just finish with this because I think they deserve all the love in the world. But they've had a player this season called Aaron Dinkci, who's been on loan from Werder Bremen, right? And he's had an absolutely cracking campaign. He scored 10 goals in the Bundesliga, 18 across all competitions. And he scored a brace against Cologne, which relegated Cologne and basically pushed Heidenheim into the Europa Conference League spot should Leverkusen win. But he won't be playing for Heidenheim next year because already, and then, you know, we know that the Bundesliga transfer market moves quite quickly. A lot of businesses sort of wrapped up before the season is done and the players move at the start of the next season. He's already been signed by Freiburg for 5 million euros, which is fine. But Heidenheim's win, thanks to Dinkci's brace, meant that Freiburg didn't qualify for European competition. So he's basically like knocked his new club out of European competition and left Heidenheim in there. And it was very funny. He was talking about the game afterwards, and he basically was like, it kind of went awry for me. He's like, but I'm happy for Heidenheim. They absolutely deserve it. I think that's part of it. I owe a lot to the club and to each individual. I don't think it'd be fair if I didn't give 100% in the final game. I loved that as a story. I'm not sure his new club will thank him particularly for it, but no. What a nice moment to finish and be like, hey, I gave everything. And I think it sums up this Heidenheim side. They've given everything across the course of this season from start to finish. They have been such a brilliant addition to the Bundesliga. And I really do hope, much as, you know, a Kaiserslautern Cup win would be historically great fun, I do hope that they get to go to Europe next season because they've been incredible.
Very good, mate. Yeah, I like that story a lot. That's pretty mad, that manager. You don't get stuff like that anymore. You don't get sometimes 15 months anymore. So he's done well, say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredible. Frank Schmidt, shout out Frank Schmidt. What a man. And continues as Heidenheim's only coach. So it's really wild, really, really wild. All right, I'm going to finish in La Liga with Valencia. And look, we've talked a lot this season about Athletic Club and their story and them returning and winning the Copa del Rey, returning to the Champions League conversation, obviously ending up in the Europa League, which I think they'll be pretty pleased with generally. But they've been a brilliant story. And there's been some great stories in La Liga. Las Palmas, I think, have been really, really good. I'm sad to see Cadiz relegated. But I think Valencia, is one that will slip under the radar because I think they remain a household name for many. And when people see them finishing, you know, eighth, ninth, they'll be like, yeah, that seems about right. But the truth is that in April of last year, the famous old club was staring at the drop, right? They were in a financially perilous position. Peter Lim's tenure has plunged the club into a state of what I would describe as manic disrepair. Fans were protesting outside of games, leaving Mestalla empty, and the split between the ownership and the club looked set to honestly spiral out of control. So they appointed club legend Ruben Barajas, who was given the reins as he tried to turn things around. They still needed a final day draw against Betis to survive by a single point. It was not perhaps the new manager bounce that they were looking for, but Barajas did enough to keep their heads above water. Anyway, they gave him a new contract. They stuck with him, but the tools he looked at his disposal left quite a lot to be desired, I would say. Last year's star players, Samuel Lino, Yunus Musa departed the club. Lino went back to Atleti after his loan spell. Musa went off to Milan. They also lost Nico Gonzalez, who went back to Barcelona and then on to Porto. Elias Mariba finished his loan spell, and so did Justin Kluivert. They spent a little bit of money. Cenk Özkakar's loan was made permanent, and importantly, Pepelu joined from across the city at Levante. You might remember this. It was a controversial move. He just signed a lifetime contract with Levante, but they were in dire financial straits and Valencia spent 5 million euros on buying him. It was a really sensible move. And they picked up some loan signings, Roman Yaremchuk and Selim Amala. But basically, the kind of modus operandi was that Barajas was going to have to rely on his youth system. And he has. Valencia have the youngest squad in La Liga, the third youngest in Europe. But under his quiet stewardship, they have rocketed back up the table and they were in the conversation for European place until last week, to be honest. A new generation is emerging from an academy that produced Isco, David Silva, Carlos Soler, Nolito, Jose Gaya, many more household names. Top of that list is Javi Guerra, who is a 20-year-old defensive midfielder, has been almost ever present. He is absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. There is not much he can't do at 20 years old. He looks like one of those players that's going to be at the very top of the game for some time to come. But to be honest, there's a host of them. 19-year-old centre-back Christian Mosquera has been a revelation as well. Diego Lopez, who's a former B-teamer brought in from Barcelona's academy, has shone. Fran Perez on the other flank, another homegrown product. Hugo Guillamon's been around for a while now. He's 24. He feels like an elder statesman in this team. Centre forward Alberto Mari starting to make his mark again. He actually had a good season at the end of last year and has struggled a bit this season, but starting to come back into it. And the emergence of Jarek Gasiorowski adds more academy weight to this side. So for Barajas to have turned this team from relegation candidates into European challengers using this young of a squad and one built really firmly on the foundations of this famous old academy has completely flipped the narrative around Valencia. The bats are flying again. The future looks bright once more.
Oh, that's brilliant. I love the Mestalla. Went there once.
It's falling apart.
It's falling apart, but it doesn't matter. It's one of those stadiums that, like, I don't know, you don't mind because it's so historic. It's so special. It's like set in the middle of like a neighborhood and it's got, you know, hustle and bustle around it and cafes. It's such a cool spot. And that team means so much to the area. And so I'm pleased for all the people. You just go to one game there and you kind of come away feeling part of it. And you're like, do I now support this team? It's a strange feeling when you go to Valencia. It's a fantastic city and I'm glad they got their football team back.
Valencia were one of those clubs that I fell in love with really young. I loved Pablo Aimar and that generation, David Albelda and all of those players. So I'm really pleased to see them doing well again, but also exceptionally pleased to see them do it in this kind of way. And that academy has produced so much talent down the years that to see this new generation coming through, they're not all going to be world beaters. They're not all going to be superstars, but there's a couple in there you're looking at and going, there's almost no one you couldn't play for and you're 20 years old. And I think when you have that and this younger squad, I hope they don't get completely picked apart because financially they remain in a little bit of trouble. So they probably are going to have to sell some of them. But if they continue to produce this amount of talent, and you know, I haven't named them all there. There's, I'd say 10 or 11 players who are Mestalla products who are coming through and have played this season for Valencia, that they're in a really good spot in terms of talent going forward. And I'm really excited to see what they can do. And I'm delighted for Barajas as well, because he came in an almost impossible position and has managed to make something out of it. So yeah, shout out to Valencia and shout out to Ruben Barajas as well.
Absolutely, Matt.
There we go. That's it. There's my four stories you might have missed that I thought we should just highlight. We'll be back after the break to do part three and a little bit of guru wisdom. Don't go anywhere.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for a little bit of
guru wisdom, guru wisdom, guru wisdom.
Thank you, boys. DJ, what you got for us?
Well, me and the boys, only a couple of months, mate, until we'll be over in America and we'll be doing these pods across the Atlantic. Look, usually I've not spent longer than about 3 weeks or so in America, but I'm starting to get my head around the fact that I don't know how long I'm going to be in America. A long time, perhaps.
Perhaps forever.
Imagine I lived in America for the rest of my life. Who knows what's coming up in my life? But no matter what, I need to get wise about American life. Because when you're on holiday there, or you're visiting family, whatever it is, working, you know you're leaving. You know it didn't really have to indulge like or worry about like the actual day-to-day life or worrying about what the rules are or the expectations are of the country. There are a few things that I've got to get my head around fast. Number one, driving. Now, fortunately, I just lean on Taylor for this all the time. And she is the designated driver when we're in America, and I could just put my feet up. So I haven't driven barely at all in America, partly through laziness. But when I did try, it was a while back now. I reckon we're talking like 14 years ago. Me and my mate Biro, who you know, went out to America and we thought we'd be a bit fancy, hired a Mustang and all that sort of stuff. We said we'd share the driving. Poor old Biro did 90% of it because I just couldn't get my head around it, mate. I couldn't get my head around the turns. I couldn't park. I just couldn't handle it. So
probably won't have a Mustang this time. So there's that.
We won't have a Mustang, but seeing the sort of cars that Taylor's looking at right now, it's not going to be small. Obviously, we drive on the left side of the road here. It's the opposite out there. And look, 75% of the world, I think, drive on the right-hand side of the road. Unfortunately, we're not one of them. I've got to get my head around driving pretty fast. I've got to get a California driving license.
I've got to do a test. Wow.
Yeah.
So what? Does your driving license just not work over there? You can't drive?
It works for a few months. You can go on a UK driving license for a few months. But also, you won't get insured very easily, like, and they'll charge you through the roof for it because it just doesn't copy over. So, yeah.
Maybe you and I can do our driving tests at the same time.
Shall we do that? Yeah, let's do it on the same day. I mean, I'd like to think I can pass the test. I've been driving for about 20-odd years, but you never know. Might fail. Failed my first one in UK, might fail my first one in the US. The second thing I've got to get my head around is the tipping culture. Not a fan. Not a fan of the tipping culture. Much would prefer it if the actual places that employed them actually paid them their wages rather than rely on...
Seems very reasonable of you.
Yeah. And so a lot of us English do struggle to get our head around this side of America. What I've noticed is that the tipping is just becoming even more automatic and even more expected in things you really wouldn't normally tip for. Sometimes you'll even just be in America, go on a website, get to checkout to just buy something online. It's like, do you want to tip 20%? No, I don't. Why would I want to tip you 20%? You haven't done anything. You just got a website. I'm ordering something. Go buy a coffee, like 20% on top of your coffee. Go and buy a beer, 20% on top of your beer. This is minimum, by the way, 20%. Anything below that is considered like rudeness, basically. But, you know, even like self-checkout at a grocery store, you buy like bread and some milk and they're like, tip? Like, for what? What am I tipping you for? Buy milk and bread? Like,
and a self-checkout, that sounds a bit excessive.
Right, it's ridiculous. So, but this is the way of life out there, right? They do have a tipping culture. I'm going into their country. I've got to get my head around this. So starting to steer that. The third thing I'm going to get my head around is patriotism, mate. They love a bit of patriotism. They love a bit of flag culture. Now, I was looking at some stats and 41% of Americans think the US is the best country in the world. Well, that's interesting. And Taylor's told me about this, that when you're at school, you are brought up to believe that America is the greatest country in the world. She's like, do you not have that? I was like, no, you know, it's not. Really? No, we don't. We have some weird stuff that we do. You know, we have, you know, weird culture around kings and queens and all that sort of stuff, which you don't have. But no, we're not told that we're the best country in the world. Anyway, I looked up how many people, what's in the UK? Where does the US rank? In the UK, the US is ranked as the 34th best country in the world. But there's also like this flag culture that I'm going to get to have to get my head around, because like there's actual like expectations of like when the national anthem is played. So you're supposed to stand up, you're supposed to face the flag, if you can see one, and you're supposed to put your right hand on your heart, and you're really supposed to sing as well, obviously. And people sing pretty loud. Now, obviously, I'm not American, so it's not my national anthem, but is this expected of me? Am I going to have to act like this? I've never done that for my own national anthem. I don't know if I can stand there singing yours like this. Yeah, got a lot to get my head around, mate. You know, people are like, oh, are you worried about where you're going to live? Are you going to worried about the time difference? Are you worried about missing people? No, I'm worried about driving, tipping and patriotism. That's what I'm worried about.
There you go. Hey, if anyone has any tips for Dean, then feel free to DM him on Twitter or Instagram.
Yeah, I have a busy inbox this week, aren't I? Of all these goals coming through, as well as tips on how to survive in America.
There you go. There you have it. And on that note, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all there's left for me to do, say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Ranks FC. We hope you've enjoyed our little roundup of the season. We've got loads more to come over the next couple of weeks with those cup finals to discuss, the Champions League and Europa Conference League as well. Lots and lots to get stuck into ahead of transfer season, where Dean, of course, really comes into his own. But for now, thank you so much for listening and we'll see you very shortly. Take it easy, Ranks Squad. Peace.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.